He's Hacker.
Talk about a fried egg. I lasted about 5 minutes out there. I said, to heck with this. I'll do this in the morning. And I don't have any inside information. The lady that did it, she got in there.
I mean,
she made it happen.
And he doesn't shy away from opinion.
And I do enjoy drinking cold beer at ballparks. So if that makes me a baseball fan, then I'm a diehard baseball fan.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
And a very good Wednesday evening to you, Jacksonville. It is Hacker After Dark before dark. In for Blue here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM with J.J. LaSelva. The Hacker Ryan Green with you on what was a very big day, it appears, in the city of Jacksonville, really for numerous reasons. The Atlantic Sun moving their headquarters here obviously is a big story collegiately. And it appears, whether you want to say the framework of a deal, if deal is too strong, but things are progressing in that fashion, whatever verbiage you want to use, it appears to be very, very good news, regardless of how you describe it, for the Jaguars, the city of Jacksonville, to reach an agreement on the stadium renovations. And that's where we're going to begin here in just a moment. The city council is supposed to see something in regards to this next Tuesday. And again, I've heard the word deal. I've heard the term framework of a deal. Whatever you want to call it, it's all good. There's nothing bad that has come out today about the renovations in the stadium. I guess the only bad news is if you were one of those people that were convinced Jacksonville was moving to London, you're going to have to probably change that narrative, it appears, because that is likely not to be the case, and we can just squash all of that. So we're going to begin there in just a moment. But again, very good news on the doorstep of rookie minicamp. The rookies come in. They're on the field Friday and Saturday. We'll be down there on Friday. I'm scheduled to talk with Deontre Prince, the fifth-round pick out of Ole Miss. Looking forward to meeting him and talking with him, and we'll bring you that conversation on Friday's edition here of Hacker After Dark. Guest lineup tonight, former Jaguar wide receiver Cecil Shorts joins me every week during the regular season. We get Cecil periodically in the offseason. Tonight is one of those nights as we will talk Jaguar draft, we will talk Jaguar offseason, and we'll look ahead to rookie minicamp this weekend with former Jaguar Cecil Shorts. Also in the 6 o'clock hour, bring you a Hacker After Dark replay of a conversation I had about a week and a half ago now. Chad Mahaffey. You say, well, Hacker, who's Chad Mahaffey? That's funny you ask. Let me tell you. Chad Mahaffey is the head football coach of Walker High School in Walker, Louisiana. The high school that Brian Thomas went to his junior and senior years. Chad Mahaffey coached Brian Thomas during his junior and senior years of high school. And we will have a Hacker After Dark replay in case you missed it on our regular show on the doorstep of rookie minicamp. We'll talk to a guy that knows and knew Brian Thomas well before most of us in Jacksonville knew that name. So his high school coach, Chad Mahaffey, comes up here in about 45 minutes or so. So we're loaded, 7 o'clock hour, jam-packed as well. We'll get to that in just a moment. Every night here on Hacker After Dark, we do give you a big deal of the night, and J.J. LaSelva. Let's do that right now.
Time now for the big deal of the night.
What's the big deal?
What is the big deal?
No big deal.
It is a big deal.
On Hacker After Dark.
You know, we do big deals of the night every night here on Hacker After Dark, and we've done so for over 2 years now. And I'm not sure in a sports-related sense if there's ever been a bigger deal of the night that we've started with than the news that started coming out earlier today. It was first reported that a deal has been reached, and then it was, I guess, changed to the framework of a deal. Then the verbiage was a lot of progress is going forward. Things are looking great. Whatever you want to call it, whatever makes you feel good in the sentence you're writing for your headline on whatever website you write for. The bottom line is for the Jaguar fan base, today has been a very good day in regards to the agreement, the framework of a stadium renovated deal between the city and the Jaguars. It's going to be presented to the city council next week. by all reports, next Tuesday night. And that's when we'll get a look at what as the framework of the agreement is. What is going to mean for this city, what it's going to look like, what it's going to cost, how much they're going to have to, you know, pay, the divvying up of it. We're going to find all that out, it appears, next week at the city council meeting. Fantastic news. I mean, there isn't better news if you're a Jaguar fan. How many years have we in the Jaguar media, you, the Jaguar fan base, had to defend this city? Remember, first it was Los Angeles, right? Jaguars are moving to L.A. Well, then the Rams and the Chargers moved to L.A. So then it was, oh, the Jaguars are going to move to London. I can't tell you how many out-of-market radio interviews I've done previewing Jaguar games or just talking Jaguar football with other cities. And regardless of the story that they brought me on to talk about, inevitably, one of the stories that I got asked about was the Jaguars in London. Oh, they're playing a game over there. How do Jaguar fans feel about that? Oh, it's two games over there now, Ryan. You know the Jaguars are going to move to London. You had guys like Jason Lockenfora over a decade ago say the Jaguars were going to move to London. That does not appear to be the case. And quite frankly, I don't believe it ever was in the cards. I never have believed that, never will believe that moving forward. As it appears, this stadium renovation, it's going forward. I mean, this thing looks very, very, very good to happen. And it's terrific news for you. It's terrific news for us. It's terrific news for everybody involved in this city when it comes to the Jacksonville Jaguars, fans, media, everybody with an interest, a vested interest in this team. Phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. And I can't wait for the city council meeting to get some more information. Boy, next week's a big week, right? You got the city council meeting on Tuesday. The NFL schedule comes out on Wednesday. There'll be a lot of juicy stuff next week. But for the here and now, for what was being reported today, and by the way, when this kind of stuff goes public, when the president of the city council and the mayor's office and other people start releasing little tidbits of info like this, they would not do that unless they're on the doorstep of a handshake or unless a handshake's already taken place. It's going to happen. Why else would you let it out publicly to the extent it was let out today? So again, I mean, look, Jacksonville, Florida, the Jacksonville Jaguars, it is a gigantic deal. I mean, for what I do, for what we do at 1010XL, for what a lot of you guys do that listen and support this team, and you think about what that team has meant to this city. You think where Jacksonville was in the 80s and the early 90s prior to 1995 and what Jacksonville is now, from a business perspective, from just everything involved, what that team has done. And now it looks like long-term, we can finally put to bed all the nonsense of are they going to move here, are they going to move there. It is a fantastic day. I can't wait to get more info next week at the city council meeting when it's revealed, I guess. But for where we are on this Wednesday, the 8th day of May in 2024, thumbs up to everybody involved on the direction it appears this thing is going with those stadium renovations. Again, we are on the doorstep of Jaguar rookie minicamp. Again, the schedule comes out 1 week from tonight. OTA is in less than 2 weeks, and the rookies are on the field on Friday. We'll get to see Brian Thomas and Mason Smith, Jarian Jones, Jordan Jefferson, DeAndre Prince on down the line. I'm looking forward to being out there on Friday, checking it out. Again, we'll talk to DeAndre Prince. We'll bring you that conversation on Friday. But let's talk to a man that wore the Jaguar uniform. Let's talk to a man that participated in OTAs and mini camps. What's it like to be a rookie? You get drafted, the whirlwind that it's been for these guys over the last 10 or 12 days. And then, bam, you're on the field in your brand-new city with your brand-new organization for this rookie minicamp and heading on into OTAs in less than 2 weeks. Cecil Shorts lived that life, 7 years in the NFL, 4 of those years right here in Jacksonville. Again, you get him every week during the year on Hacker After Dark. You get him periodically during the offseason. And I thought with rookie minicamp on the doorstep, let's talk to Cecil about all of it. On what is, again, a terrific night for the Jaguar fan base, everybody involved with the Jacksonville Jaguars, with the news that's coming out about the framework, an agreement, a deal, or even if it's just major progress being made that way. I've read everything today that said one of those four things, and it's all great, great news for the future of that organization in this city. Cecil Shorts, former Jaguar wide receiver, next on a Wednesday night edition of Hacker After Dark with J.J. LaSelva, the Hacker Ryan Green with you. Jacksonville, we're glad you're with us. It's 1010XL, and it's 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Rookie minicamp for the Jaguars kicks off tomorrow. We will be down there on Friday taking in rookie minicamp, and then, of course, OTAs now less than 2 weeks away. Let's talk to a guy that I'm sure remembers rookie minicamp, and I know he remembers OTAs. Former NFL wide receiver, including 4 years right here in Jacksonville, my buddy Cecil Shorts. You get him every week on Hacker After Dark during the year, and we get Cecil periodically with us here during the off season. Cecil, it's been a little while, man. How are you?
I'm well, brother. Enjoying the off season. How about you, man?
Cecil, we're good, man, and thank you for the time as always. All right, a brand new wide receiver here in town with Brian Thomas. You and I spoke about him in the pre-draft process. You're very familiar with Brian Thomas out there at LSU. As a former wideout such as yourself, your thoughts on the new addition here in Jacksonville?
Huge guy, man. 6'3", around 210 pounds. I want to say he's one of the fastest receivers this year in the class with a 4.33 at the combine. And what's impressive about the 4.33 is it translates to the field, right? You'll see guys that run 4.33 at the combine. They're like, hey, where was this on film? Why haven't we heard of this guy throughout the year? Well, you've seen that on the film. He is rolling in the SEC going by defenders. Does a great job of going up and get the ball. He uses a huge frame to go up and meet the ball at his highest point, comes down with it. He's a big play waiting to happen, right? 17.3 yards a catch, 17 touchdowns this year. He is somebody that's going to be a huge down-the-field asset to Trevor Lawrence and his offense. He is a 50-50 ball magnet. He provides a huge, big red zone target. He is somebody that they're going to use. He has a chance to be very productive in this offense next year.
How does his game intertwine with Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis, the new guys now on that wide receiver core?
It's interesting. It's interesting because I look at Gabe Davis as kind of similar as far as a big guy that can go down the field and make the tough catch, make the 50-50 balls. And then you got a guy like Christian Kirk who can run himself. So you're looking at an offense that wants to be explosive, right? You look at Christian Kirk, you get the speed. You look at Gabe Davis, who his targets, his yards per catch, his big play ability shows up, especially in the biggest games and playoffs. And then you got Brian Thomas Jr. does the exact same thing. So you can tell they're trying to get very explosive, get fast, and get the plays going down the field, which is huge. So he'll fit right in. And then, of course, you got Evan Engram in the middle. So you got three quality options at receiver. And then, honestly, with him being a first-round pick, I know Zay Jones got released. There's a question, will they keep Zay? Well, when you draft a guy in the first round, he's going to play, right? That's just what it is. So I expect him to be used going down the field on post routes, on go routes, possibly a few comebacks because you run by the guy a few times. But they're going to use him to be explosive down the field along with Gabe and Christian and Evan Engram.
Former Jaguar wide receiver Cecil Shorts with us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Cecil, back in August, you and I talked every week leading into the year. Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, Calvin Ridley, right? We were fired up. It didn't materialize. Injuries had a lot to do with that, particularly with Zay, then Christian Kirk at the end of the year, and now Ridley leaves in free agency. Zay gets cut. We'll see where he ultimately lands. He's had a ton of visits. I know he's already been to Arizona, Tennessee, and I believe today he's in Dallas, so he is certainly in demand. But when you compare what's in the wide receiver room now, Kirk remains, Devin Duvernay is new, Gabe Davis is new, Brian Thomas is new, to what they had last year. Similarities, differences, pros, cons, how would you assess that?
younger and faster. Again, it's about being explosive. They're younger and they're faster. Devin Duvernay is known for what? His speed. Brian Thomas Jr., was he known for? 4.33. Like, his explosive ability. He had 12 touchdown catches, Thomas Jr. from LSU in the draft pick this year. He had 12 touchdown catches of at least 20 yards down the field. Like, he is an explosive player waiting to happen. We bring in Gabe Davis, the exact same thing. And Gabe didn't get a ton of targets because he was behind Stephon Diggs getting all the targets. You know, when Stephon was there, he was getting 100-plus targets a year in those 4 or 5 years he was there, 4 or 4 years he was there. So Gabe was getting kind of the leftovers and making big plays when his number is called, right? So when you look at that receiver room now, you're younger, you're more explosive, you're faster. Still some development that has to happen, right? I wouldn't say they're a great route running receiver group. I think it's more speed. And when you get a lot of speed, guys, it's hard for certain guys to be able to slow down, put the brakes on, and run different routes. But if you find ways, that's going to be on the OC. That's going to be on him to try to find ways to get different guys open. But when you think of explosiveness and speed, man, it got to excite you when it comes to this receiver room.
I want to branch out to some of the other draft picks here in a moment, Cecil. But final thought on the wide receivers, at least for now. You look at some of the undrafted free agents they brought in. They're all tall. They're all big, including one guy out from your way at Texas San Antonio, Joshua Cephas, who a lot of people were surprised he didn't get drafted. He could be a surprise when rookie minicamp begins here tomorrow. They're obviously looking for a certain type of player because Brian Thomas, along with the undrafted guys, all fit that similar body frame.
They're looking for a tall, space-eating guy, a guy that can really make the tough contested catches. They're looking for guys that can I wouldn't say it has to be a super fast guy, but they're looking for guys to be big plays down the field. Guys get that 50-50 ball. They're looking for guys to make explosive plays. And in their mind, it seems like they want that taller frame, which is fine. You can see that across the league, whether it's Mike Evans, whether it's whoever, right? Those type of frames can make plays for you. And if that's going to help Trevor Lawrence take that next step forward, continue to ascend and that offense continue to get better, then let's see it. I'm all for it.
Trent Baalke at the end of the year against Cecil Shorts here with us on 1010XL. Cecil, Trent Baalke at the end of the year laid out a blueprint back in January. We want to get bigger. We want to get more physical on the line of scrimmage. They go out and get Mitch Morse in free agency. They get Eric Armstead. They re-sign Ezra Cleveland. They bring in Trevis Gibson. And then in the draft, you go out and get Javon Foster on the O-line. You bring in some huge defensive linemen at LSU in Mason Smith, Jordan Jefferson, and Miles Cole. Clearly, Baalke had an agenda of wanting to get bigger and more physical on the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, and it looks like, at least on paper right now, he accomplished that.
I tell you what, you look at the draft picks, you look at Mason Smith, I guess you can call the Jaguars the Jacksonville Tigers. Three guys in the draft. But that speaks to the talent that LSU has, right? That speaks to the talent and what they're looking for. You want to get more physical. You want to be more dominant on both sides of the ball. They did that in free agency and definitely addressed those needs in the draft. When you get guys like Mason Smith, who's 6'5", 306, who can play inside, can play outside, when you bring guys like Eric Armstead in, it sets a tone, right? It sets a tone. It seems like they want to be a physical, nasty team on defense. And when you bring guys like that in, that's going to help you win games. To me, you still win games by dominating the offensive line and dominating that defensive line, right? You got to get pressure on the quarterback and stop the run. Then you got to protect your asset and Trevor Lawrence and be able to run the ball with Travis Etienne, right? So when you can do that, when you can shut offenses down, when you can get pressure on those star quarterbacks, because the AFC is loaded, I mean loaded with quarterbacks. You look at every division, you got some superstar big names in those divisions. So if you can get a good defensive line and get pressure, stop the run, and then protect your asset in Trevor Lawrence, if you can keep him healthy, I think he can be one of the best in the league, but you got to keep him healthy and keep him upright.
See, so I want to talk about some overall roster issues in a moment, but you went through this process, the pre-draft process. You arrive in Jacksonville. I'm sure they threw you out at rookie minicamp very soon after that. What is this weekend going to be like, and what has this two-week period been like since the draft? Guys find out they're coming to Duval County. They got to make arrangements to get here. They get here, and I imagine it's a whirlwind for them right now.
I tell you what, man, my year – now, I've seen it before, right? I have not been through rookie minicamp because it was the lockout year. So the year we got drafted, they literally talked to Del Rio and whoever else on the phone, and then I didn't see them until training camp. But I've been through it as far as seeing it the next year, all the years I was playing. I've seen it covering different teams. This time period is exciting. You get drafted or you get called to this team, and then now it's time to show your skills. Now you get here, right? Now your mind says, how do I stay here? If I'm not a draft pick, how do I get noticed, right? One of my goals each and every day was to get noticed and do something to stand out on film every single day. That's how you make the team. Because for those rookies, it's not guaranteed. 90 guys are coming in on the whole entire roster. Only 53 are going to make the roster. And then how they do cuts now is differently. It used to be like two or three different cuts. Now I think it's just one huge cut, right? So it's important to get as many reps in as you can and make plays when you're out there. It's important to get noticed. It's important to be really good on special teams. Unless you're a first round, second round, and probably third round pick, fourth round on down, you're not safe. And I've seen third round picks get cut because they weren't good enough. But fourth round on down, you are not safe. So it's imperative right now that you're taking it seriously. Of course, you want to celebrate. You want to be excited. That time is over now. Now it's go time. Now it's all football. For a rookie, this is the longest year of football in your life. You go from training in the summer to get ready for your last season of college football. You go through the whole entire season. You play a bowl game, possibly, playoffs, possibly. And then you go straight into training mode. Then from training, you go combine, pro days. You go to meetings. You got the draft process. And then you get about a week. And then next thing you know, boom, you're right back into football again. So it's a long rookie year. And it can get frustrating. It can get overwhelming at times. But this is what you want to do. So now it's about go out there and making it happen.
Final moments with former Jaguar wide receiver Cecil Shorts. Cecil, quickly, the Jarvis Landry thing. He's going to come here for a workout during rookie minicamp. I mean, he hasn't played in the league since 2022. He's 31 years old, but obviously he says he's healthy. He wants to come see what he has, and certainly the Jaguars want to take a look at him as well. What, if anything, did you make of that?
I think it's a few things. I think, one, you're doing him a favor. He may know somebody. His agent may know somebody, and they're like, hey, he still can give it a shot. When he played, he was very productive. He's a very, very tough guy. So if he's a guy that can show he still has it in rookie minicamp and show he can make plays, he's never been a fast guy, right? So I think it's going to be interesting because the way they're setting the room up now is for taller, bigger, faster, explosive guys, right? Christian Kirk is not very tall, but he's very explosive. Landry has never been that explosive type of player that you think, oh my gosh, he's going to be blowing by people. He's a tough guy. He's a route runner. He's physical, run after catch. But if he can bring that leadership quality, if he show he can still, he's still got it, he can bring that leadership quality, that can be a good asset to the room. But he has to go out there and, you know, it's been about a year or two that he's played, so he got to go out there and show a lot. But that's what I think it is. A favor done from an agent or somebody that knows people, that's not surprising. But if he can go out there and play, hey, he can be an asset in a smaller role. I don't see him having a big role if he makes the team, but a smaller role.
It would be an interesting dynamic. Obviously, he's a former LSU Tiger, Brian Thomas, coming in from LSU. I'd like to keep Landry around for that for the next couple of months this offseason. All right, see, so you look at the roster. To me, there's two spots where I think potentially you could add a veteran. Edge pass rush, and we did this song and dance last year, and they never brought anybody in, or at least they never signed anybody. I'm still not sure what they have behind Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker. They brought in Trevis Gibson, which is an upgrade over Caleb on Chaisson, but there's not much after that. And then at corner, right, they drafted two guys. You got Darby and Tyson Campbell and Darnell Savage, but with Xavien Howard and Stephon Gilmore and guys like that out there, I don't know. I think veteran corner and or veteran edge pass rush is where the team should be looking.
I tell you what, when you look around the division alone, and you look at, let's start with the Colts, right? You got Pittman Jr. You got Josh Downs. I think they just drafted a guy, AD Mitchell from Texas, right? You look at the Texans. They got Stephon Diggs they traded for. They got Nico Collins, 1,400 yards last year. And you got Tank Dell, extremely talented guy, right? Then you look at Tennessee. They got, as you know well, Calvin Ridley on one side. And they have Trayvon Burks, who's still learning how to be a receiver, but the pressure won't be on him because former first-round pick, so he has talent. But now you got DeAndre Hopkins and Calvin Ridley are surrounding him, right? So maybe he can step up.
And they just signed Tyler Boyd. Yeah, Tennessee signed Tyler Boyd yesterday.
And they signed, so that's death right there. So you look at the AFC South alone, who you play twice a year, you need to be able to cover. You need to be able to cover because those guys can play. All of those names have made plays or have potential to make plays. And then this, it's a passing league now. Do I still think you need to run the ball to win? Absolutely. But it's a passing league. You need to pass to be able to score, right? So I think corner, it has to be high on the list, whether you're bringing in one vet, two vets. You have to solidify that cornerback spot. And then again, not only do you have to have the cover, you got to rush the passer. So if you ain't got no pressure on those guys, they're going to, no matter who's the cornerbacks, they're going to be able to pick those guys apart if there's no pressure on them. So I think those, I agree with you, are two needs that you need to bring in, whether it's Xavier Howard, whether it's Stephon Gilmore, or some other D lineman. You have to fill those voids. I wouldn't say voids, but add more depth to what you have right now.
Cecil, final question. We talked on January 7th when the season ended. That was a bad day for the Jaguars, for the fan base, everybody involved. That was brutal in that collapse. Now here we are 4 months later. Rookie minicamp begins tomorrow. Free agency is for the most part in the rearview mirror. The draft is obviously in the rearview mirror. Are they better? Is this a better roster now than it was when they walked off the field in Nashville back in January?
I would say yes, but I think the biggest thing is going to be health. Right? The biggest thing is going to be health. This team will go as far as the health will go. If you can keep Trevor Lawrence upright and keep him healthy, I think your roster, your team will finish way better than what you did a year before. If not, if he's banged up, if other guys are banged up, if you aren't getting pressure on the quarterback, if you have to continue to struggle against the run defense, I'm sorry, just run defense continue to struggle, then I think you'll battle some things. But I think health is a huge thing. And if I had to guess if they're better, I would say yes. They are better than the previous year. You just got to keep healthy.
Hard to believe. Rookie minicamp is here. OTA is a couple of weeks away. Cecil, the next time you and I talk, man, we'll be previewing training camp. And that's amazing to think about as this offseason has absolutely flown on by. I appreciate it, brother. We'll talk soon.
Hey, take care, man. Thanks.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
Yes, it is. In for Blue this week, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, J.P. Shadrick, Jaguars.com, Jaguars Radio. He will stop by right about 7:15 or so as we'll preview rookie minicamp, kind of do a recap of the draft and the offseason. It's been a little while since I talked to J.P. It'll be good to catch up with him. And coming up towards the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour, Eric Galco, who is the director of football operations of the Shrine Bowl, one of the all-star games. They had half the Jaguar draft class and a couple of the big-time undrafted free agents participated in the Shrine Bowl. Eric Galco, the director of player ops of the Shrine Bowl, will join us to talk about some of these Jaguar draft picks that hit the field on Friday for rookie mini camp. I tell you guys this periodically, but I think I need to reinforce it. You know, at least once a show, I'm going to try to, and that's the MyBookie Digital Studio. Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, you name it, every show on 1010XL streams 6A, normally to 10P, in this week's instance, 8P, but we're on every night on Hacker After Dark on 1010XL's MyBookie Digital Studio. Again, 1010XL Facebook, 1010XL YouTube, 1010XL Twitter/X. You can watch the show there every night if you are so inclined, and we hope you do. If you're outside of your car, you don't want to fire up the app for whatever reason, you can just log on and catch us on any of those social media platforms. After the draft, we had the opportunity on Hacker After Dark to catch up with Chad Mahaffey. Chad Mahaffey is the head coach of Walker High School in Walker, Louisiana. That is the high school of Jaguar first-round pick Brian Thomas. Chad coached Brian, or was the head coach for Brian, his junior and senior years in high school. Knew Brian well before then. Before Brian Thomas takes the field for rookie minicamp, I thought we'd give you a Hacker After Dark replay, a guy that knows him very well. Chad Mahaffey, a Hacker After Dark replay, the head coach of Walker High School in Walker, Louisiana, right now on Hacker After Dark. Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, your home of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Last night, Brian Thomas, the wide receiver from LSU, became the first-round pick for the Jags, taken with the 23rd selection. Let's find out about Brian Thomas from a guy that coached him in high school. The head coach of Walker High School in the state of Louisiana is head coach Chad Mahaffey, and he joins us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Coach, how we doing?
Doing good. Appreciate you having me on.
Hey, Coach, we thank you for the time. All right, Brian Thomas, you were his head coach for 2 years in high school, his junior year and his senior year. Let's talk about him. First and foremost, what did it mean to you last night to see one of your former guys get drafted in round number one?
Yeah, you know, our school, you know, Walker High School is a really good, you know, community-based school, and Brian's been a guy that's, you know, been well known, you know, for his athletic exploits for a long time, and I think the whole town, the whole you know, community is excited to kind of see his success and see him achieve the things that he's worked for. So, you know, more than anything, just happy for Brian. You know, I mean, this is a great opportunity. I think with, you know, players going to the NFL, you know, you don't have control over where you're going, especially as a rookie, to be able to go to a team that's been succeeding, you know, on a high level, has got some recent playoff experience, got a great quarterback, got a great coach. I mean, I think from a football standpoint, that part is really, I feel fortunate for him, you know, that he's not going to a place that, you know, sometimes you feel like, man, they got a long way to go, you know.
The head coach of Walker High School in the state of Louisiana, Chad Mahaffey, here with us on 1010XL. You had Brian his junior year and his senior year. You were his head coach for those two seasons. When did you know, Coach, that something was special about Brian Thomas?
Well, I was at another school in Baton Rouge, and when I took the job, I had known about you know, him being a, you know, standout performer, and he had a great sophomore year. So I had, you know, obviously kind of aware of that before making that move, but I mean, it, you know, doesn't take a whole lot of, insight to see a kid out there running around and doing the things he was doing. He was an outstanding basketball player. I think the year I came, they ended up making it to the state finals, and they had won the state championship before, where he was the MVP of the tournament as a freshman. So I got to see him on the basketball court before I saw him do any football things, and you could just see the explosiveness, and definitely exciting to get to work with him.
Now, we see the 4.33 speed at the combine. We see the size. Tell us about the player. What kind of player is he? What did the Jaguars get last night when they drafted Brian Thomas?
Yeah, I think he's just got a really unique skill set, you know, a big guy, just explosions kind of the one overriding characteristic, I would say. And he's really very physically strong. You know, that's the other thing that stands out. You know, a lot of times wide receivers, you know, maybe a little slighter, you know, maybe not the most physical guys, but, you know, and he can be a really great physical presence on the outside as a blocker, but also there's just something, you know, when he goes up for a football, I think he's generating, you know, so much force. You just see the other DBs sometimes just kind of, you know, kind of fall down with him. You know, they have a hard time getting up to the level where he's at because of his strength and explosion, and, you know, just a really unique skill set. And then the other thing I think Brian, you know, always had, you know, a lot of times these tall guys, you know, they're kind of, you know, straight speed, you know, you might see, but he had a lot of wiggle and run after the catch. He was a great punt returner for us, you know, in high school as well. So I think for a tall guy to have some of that run after catch ability, is pretty unique as well.
Couple of more for head coach Chad Mahaffey of Walker High School out there in the state of Louisiana. He was the head coach for Brian Thomas, Brian's junior and senior years there in high school. Coach, the Jaguars always talk about character, right? They want to bring good guys into the locker room. There was a time here in Jacksonville where that wasn't necessarily the case, and Doug Peterson and Trent Baalke always make a point of wanting not only to bring in the good players, but the correct players for what they're trying to build here. Brian Thomas as a person, how would you describe him?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he comes from a good family environment, you know, with his mom and dad, and I think they've, you know, definitely instilled the, you know, the kind of no nonsense, you know, character in him. You know, I don't think he's a guy you've got to, you know, worry about that is really out seeking the limelight or the attention or a lot of things outside of football. I think he, you know, just enjoys, you know, competing and, you know, doing the things, you know, on the field that he's supposed to do. And so I think you get a guy that's, you know, not going to, like I say, draw attention to the team in a negative light because of off field things. He just really pretty quiet, shows up, goes, does his work. And then again, he's got a really, you know, good competitiveness, you know, when the lights come on. And I think you see that emotion come out of him on the field at those times.
Coach, as we begin to wrap up, when's the last time you spoke with him? Are you going to talk to him in the near future? Does he get back to Walker High School very often? Obviously became a big star at LSU this past season.
Yeah, you know, we're only the school's about 25 minutes from LSU's campus. So, you know, he's back and forth at, you know, games and basketball games and stuff like that, especially in the off season for them. So, still definitely a guy that's come around. And, you know, I know this is all this pre-draft and all this kind of thing has been a hectic time. Had texted with his dad earlier this week about something else, and I've kind of learned that, you know, that these guys are getting hit from all kind of angles right now. So probably give it a few days and try and reach out and just, you know, tell him congrats again and think he's got a great situation there to go to in Jacksonville.
Head coach Chad Mahaffey of Walker High School out there in Louisiana. He was the head coach for Brian Thomas, Brian's junior and senior years in high school. Brian was drafted 23rd overall last night in round number one by the Jacksonville Jaguars. Coach, we'll say hello to Brian for you when we see him at the press conference, and thank you for joining me on short notice, my friend. Really appreciate it.
Yep, not a problem, and you know, appreciate it. Appreciate you giving us a call.
Glad to bring you that Hacker After Dark replay. That was the night after the draft on our regular program, 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock. But since we were moved up this week because Blue's on vacation, thought we would bring you a replay of that with rookie minicamp on the horizon as Brian Thomas, the first-round pick. And look, the more time that goes by from that draft, honestly, the more I like it. And those of you that have listened to me for a while, you know I'm never sunshine and rainbows guy, all right? I have been just absolutely obliterated by some people on social media for being too Jaguar negative at times. But having said that, I do like this draft class because all of these guys are going to contribute. See, last year was weird, and in hindsight, it looks more and more awful as we go along. Anton Harrison was a great pick because it was a need and it was a good player. You drafted a backup tight end in round two. You drafted a backup running back in round three. You drafted a backup linebacker that ultimately got hurt in round four with a backup defensive lineman. You drafted another backup defensive lineman in round five. Now, Antonio Johnson, the second fifth-round pick, looks like he's going to be a good player. But guys that were going to be backups at best this year, I mean, think about this, all right? Brian Thomas is going to have to be a big weapon for you on offense. Mason Smith is going to play, and he's going to play a lot on that D-line. Same thing, I believe, with Jordan Jefferson, because Fadakasi's gone. We'll see about some of the other veterans that may not make this roster, but I expect those two LSU tackles to play a lot on defense. You know Jarian Jones is going to play a lot. Third-round pick at a position of need, I think DeAndre Prince is going to find his way, certainly on special teams, if not cracking some of that defensive lineup as well. The kicker is going to be the kicker of the future in Cam Little. Keelan Robinson is going to be one of your main return guys. The only project that you drafted that probably won't play a lot this year is seventh-round pick Miles Cole. So, Balky this year drafted not only need, but he drafted guys that are going to fill positions and are going to get in there and play. Last year, he did not do that. Now, I hope the best for Brenton Strange and Tank Bigsby and Ventrell Miller and Tyler Lacy, Cooper Hodges, I guess Yasir Abdullah. I don't think the verdict has been announced on the draft class of 2023. Other than Anton Harrison, it certainly was not a good start. But hopefully Bigsby can pick a big year two jump. Hopefully Strange and Lacy Abdullah can take big year two jumps. That's the hope. Is that the expectation? I don't know. That's the hope, though. But I really like this draft class in 2024, and I'm excited about seeing some of these guys, or really all of these guys, actually, on Friday when we get to go out and observe rookie minicamp. Almost at halftime here on Hacker After Dark. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. We'll take you up till 8 o'clock. NBA playoff action tonight. Game 2, Madison Square Garden. Indiana and the New York Knicks. Knicks lead that series 1-0. In the National Hockey League, the Bruins and the Panthers drop the puck in about 35 minutes. Boston leads that series 1-0. Game 2 tonight down in South Florida. J.P. Shadrick, Jaguars.com and Jaguars Radio. He comes up in about 20 minutes. Coming up next, let's go outside of Jacksonville, but we'll remain in the National Football League. Let's take a look at some big storylines. They have issues at Kansas City with one of their young stars. A lot of interesting things going on, including the world tour that Zay Jones is on, visiting his third team in, I believe, what is 3 consecutive days. We'll talk about that next. Hacker After Dark on a Wednesday here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
Yes, it is. 7 o'clock hour is here. In for Blue. We'll take you up till 8 o'clock tonight. 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Boy, they got some problems in Kansas City. Rashee Rice, who was one of their young stars at wide receiver, we all know about the racing incident that was a big issue for him, what, a couple of weeks ago, got arrested for that. Now, apparently, he is a suspect in an alleged assault in Dallas. That is not good. When you have 2 issues involving the law within a month's time, yikes. And, of course, now, after the fact, you got a lot of people that cover the draft that are coming out and saying, yeah, we kind of heard some stuff about this kid prior to getting drafted. And that's unfortunate that's coming out now. I didn't hear any of that. Maybe they did in Kansas City, but I didn't hear much of that at all. But unfortunately, look, I mean, Kansas City, they did draft Xavier Worthy in round number 1 from a football sense. You hope they can figure out what they're doing with the wide receiver position for Patrick Mahomes. They gave Travis Kelce that big extension. But as far as Rashee Rice, I mean, who knows? You have 2 incidents with the law. One, a suspect in an alleged assault. The other, a drag racing incident in which people got injured. Ugh, that is not good, man. Not good at all. Joe Burrow back in the news. Why? Because he's back on the field. Mentioned this earlier in the week. Cincinnati going through some rookie mini camp, I believe, this week. And Joe Burrow was out there throwing for the first time in a while since that Thursday night game where he got injured in Baltimore. And he is one of several quarterbacks that are coming back off of injury. Joe Burrow back in the fold. Anthony Richardson back in the fold. Justin Herbert back in the fold. It's just wild to think about the AFC. It really didn't come to fruition last year because of the injuries. But you look at the AFC now, right? Aaron Rodgers, right, got hurt as well. Think about the American Football Conference. Just go division by division. AFC East, you got Tua, you got Josh Allen, you got Aaron Rodgers. AFC South, Trevor Lawrence, CJ Stroud. We'll see about Anthony Richardson, Will Levis. AFC North, Burrow's back. Deshaun Watson's back. Lamar Jackson's the reigning MVP. Russell Wilson now with Pittsburgh. And, of course, in the AFC West, it's all about Mahomes and Herbert. Of course, you got the big Gardner Minshew signing with the Las Vegas Raiders. And Bo Nix, the rookie in Denver. The AFC is just loaded, man. Absolutely loaded. Wish some of those guys would have found their way to the NFC, but they didn't. Take the top 5 quarterbacks in the NFC right now. Who are they? Dak Prescott, Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts. Where would those guys rank in the AFC? Would they even be in the top 5? I don't know. We'll see about Caleb Williams, right? We'll see about Jaden Daniels. They got some new blood in the NFC, at least, with the number 1 and number 2 picks in the draft. But man alive, a lot of injured good quarterbacks are coming back into the fold, including Anthony Richardson in the Jaguars division, the AFC South. Speaking of quarterbacks, we're at the time of year after the draft where people start doing post-draft analysis, roster analysis, right? Or in this case, on CBSSports.com, 2024 quarterback power rankings. JJ, have you seen this list, 1 to 32, that came out earlier this afternoon?
No.
All right, so Trevor Lawrence, based on what we know that he did last year, based on where guys landed in free agency via trade, the draft, etc., where would you think, or where do you think CBS Sports had Trevor Lawrence 1 to 32 entering mid-May?
I don't know, 15 or something?
That's exactly right. They had him right in the middle. 15, right smack dab in the middle of the league. And you know what? I think that's probably fair. I don't know how you can argue that. The quarterbacks that were ahead of Trevor Lawrence, obviously Patrick Mahomes. Brock Purdy, they had number two. I don't know about that. He did go to the Super Bowl. I mean, I get it, but that's a little rich for me. Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, CJ Stroud, Lamar Jackson. Let me stop right there. AFC, 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 AFC. Yikes. Then Jalen Hurts, Dak Prescott, Justin Herbert. All right, let me stop again. Is Dak Prescott better than Trevor Lawrence? I would argue that. I'm not certain about that. I would probably take Trevor, actually. Is Justin Herbert better than Trevor Lawrence? Again, the Herbert thing, man, I hear how great he is, right? Like, I keep hearing how awesome he is. Guy hasn't won a playoff game. He lost his only playoff game to Trevor. And now all of his weapons are gone. Austin Eckler's gone. Gerald Everett's gone. Keenan Allen's gone. Mike Williams is gone. I don't know if I would have Herbert above Trevor Lawrence. They got Jordan Love above Trevor Lawrence. Now I am going to start taking issue with this list. Jordan Love was not good up until about Thanksgiving of last year. And then all of a sudden, he turned out to be pretty good towards the end of the year. Will that continue? But I'm sorry, if you give me the option right now of Jordan Love or Trevor Lawrence, I am not taking Jordan Love. Aaron Rodgers, that's a career achievement award. Plus, he's coming off an Achilles. Tua is not better than Trevor. He is on this list. I would probably say Jared Goff is better than Trevor. And they got Kirk Cousins, again, a 35-year-old coming off an Achilles. So I stand corrected. I'm not sure how fair that list is. Just out of curiosity, the quarterbacks they have right behind Trevor, Matt Stafford, Deshaun Watson, Geno Smith, Russell Wilson, Baker Mayfield. All right. I would have Trevor a little higher, but the point is, Trevor did not play well last year. Was it due to injuries? Yeah, probably. But nationally, that's going to be the narrative. Trevor regressed in 2023 from where he was in 2022. Will that regression continue this year, or will he turn the corner and go back to the 2022 player that we saw take the Jaguars to the AFC divisional playoff? More NFL coming up in a matter of moments. JP Shadrick, Jaguars.com, and Jaguars Radio about 10 minutes away. I did want to bring this up as well as we shift gears quickly to the world of college football. We'll do more on this tonight. Cole Kublick will join us tomorrow, actually, to talk a little Florida Gators. CBS Sports put out their way too early post-spring top 25. 8 Gator opponents are on this top 25. 8 of the 12. Now, I said last night, the Gator schedule to me is a good logo schedule. I'm not sure how good some of these teams are. But CBS has Georgia 1, Texas 4, Ole Miss 6, and LSU 10. 4 of their top 10 are on the Gator schedule. The remaining teams, Tennessee 16, JJ, your Miami Hurricanes are 17, Florida State is 20, and Texas A&M 23. Every team I named, the Gators play in 2024. Goes to show you how tough this schedule is on paper. Will that translate onto the field? We'll see. But on paper, it might be the toughest schedule in the history of Florida football. JP Shadrick, Jaguars.com, Jaguars Radio, previewing rookie minicamp, reviewing the Jaguar draft class. He's next, Wednesday night edition, Hacker After Dark.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. The Jaguar draft is in the rearview mirror, 9 guys drafted. How does that affect the current roster? Well, quite frankly, it already has, as Joey Sly and Zay Jones have already been released. Let's talk about all of it with J.P. Shadrick, Jaguars.com, and Jaguars Radio. He's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. J.P., how you doing?
I'm doing well, Hacker. Nice to be back with you. It's been a little bit. A lot is happening the last couple of weeks, and a lot in the weeks ahead in the offseason program. We're already in phase 2, so I'm moving forward here.
Yeah, it's been a very, very busy offseason. Let's begin with the news of Zay Jones' release. I think a lot of Jaguar fans, JP, saw the writing on the wall, certainly when Brian Thomas was drafted. There was hope that maybe Zay could remain here as a wide receiver 4, but clearly that was not in the plans.
It's an expensive wide receiver 4, you know, if his – I think that's the priority number one was the money involved in it. And, I mean, the other changes they've made, they added Gabe Davis already. Now they've got Brian Thomas Jr. They've got some younger guys, developmental guys the last year or two that they're very confident in. So it seemed like the right time. And, you know, now they've got a little bit of savings to go into the rest of this offseason. If they find something else they want out there, they'll have a little more room to maneuver. So, I mean, Zay had some big moments here. There's no doubt about that. I mean, you know, there were some big-time catches in big games and key situations, but only, you know, missed a lot of time last year too. So kind of a mixed bag, and obviously the off-the-field stuff overshadowed last year a little bit, though there were no charges brought for any of that. A little bit later. So it's all kind of wrapped up and done now. And now the Jaguars can move forward with kind of a new starting receiver core with obviously Christian Kirk coming back, but Gabe Davis and Brian Thomas, that's a pretty good trio.
No, it is. There's no doubt. And I want to get your thoughts on that room in a moment. Final thought on Zay in relation to the fans. Fans really seem to like Zay Jones. I mean, he was only here for 2 years, but he had some big moments, as you said. Why do you think Zay and the fans, I guess, related so well together?
I don't know. I always thought he gave thoughtful and deep answers. It wasn't just, let me give you a quick, cliche answer. I mean, he would truly think about a question and give you as strong of an answer as he could. I always thought he gave respect to the media in that regard and in turn giving respect to the fans who are watching those interviews. So I liked that approach from him, and I just felt like he was pretty genuine in his interaction with not just media, but people in general. And, that carries over a long way. And that part I think we'll miss because Zay was – you want to talk about a conversation now. I mean, you sit down with him and get into any topic, you're going to get quite a longer – bargain than you thought. So that's the part I think I'm going to miss the most is the conversation he would have with us in the locker room.
Yeah, for what you and I do, Zay on offense, Rayshon Jenkins on defense, we're going to have to find some more talkers in that Jaguar locker room this year. No question about that. JP Shadrick, Jaguars.com, Jaguars Radio. JP, I was going through my camera roll on my cell phone earlier because I remember a picture I took at training camp in mid-August last year. And it was Christian Kirk, Calvin Ridley, and Zay Jones. And I remember at the time thinking, all right, man, this wide receiving core could be interesting for the next couple of years. And now here we are 8-9 months later, and Kirk is the only guy left. But like you said, Gabe Davis has arrived, a first-round pick in Brian Thomas. A lot of turnover in that wide receiver room. What do you make of the wide receiver room the way it stands right now?
Yeah, add Devin Duvernay to the mix as well, who came in free agency and could be a role on offense. And of course, I think you count Evan Engram in that mix too, just the way he runs routes and does certain things on the offensive side. So they've got different weapons. And, you know, I think a big priority, and this has been fairly evident and clear over the last couple of years, but a big priority for the coaching staff when they are looking for players to fill, especially in this offense, is that high football IQ. You cannot be just running around not knowing where you're going. I mean, they like to change a lot at the line. They would like to, I think, a little bit more and set up certain matchups against the defense that they may not have time to flip a formation or whatever. There were a couple instances in the past where Zay Jones, for certain, they made a change at the line, and Zay all of a sudden had to run Christian Kirk's route because they didn't have time to change it, and it went for like a 50-yard touchdown. And, you know, things like that are something this offense really needs. And that's, I think, was a priority going into this offseason. We need guys that know how our offense is built. They know how to adjust off of it. And that's what they're looking for. And I think that's what they got in Davis. They feel like that's what they got in Brian Thomas Jr. We heard Doug Peterson's answer about that the next day after Brian Thomas showed up. So that's where they are. They need smart players, especially at the skill positions, to run those routes. And then obviously Trevor Lawrence to get the ball out to them on time if he has time to do that. That's priority number one, is to keep him upright.
Brian Thomas is not coming by himself. The Jaguars went to Baton Rouge three times. He's bringing with him, what, about 640 pounds of defensive line in Mason Smith and Jordan Jefferson, really beefing up that interior D-line. And, JP, I go back to Trent Baalke at the end of the year. It was like late January he held that press conference. And at the time, everybody was focusing on Calvin Ridley and Josh Allen, right? What's their future? But Baalke told us, he said, look, we need to get physical, tougher, stronger on the line of scrimmage. And you look at this offseason with the combination of free agency and what they did in the draft, I think they added eight guys that are 280 plus to both sides of the ball.
It's an excellent point, right? And on the defensive side of that, if they're going to play more true four-man fronts, which they've kind of hinted at over the conversations we've had publicly, you know, well, you need bodies to do that. So you need to add some defensive tackle depth. And just speaking to those guys, I mean, Jordan Jefferson is a beast. I mean, the guy's throwing up, what, 38 reps at the combine on the bench press and you know, was a one-year player transferred in. And then Mason Smith, a big, you know, like just a measurable. Like, he is massive and can move and – might have gone a little bit higher. There was some changes in Baton Rouge, especially in the defensive line, in the coaching staff. They had a lot of different turnover there. And so that inconsistency, I wonder if Mason Smith, the last year or so, might have gone a little bit higher in the draft, even had he had a little more consistency around him on the staff there. But that's all in the rear view now. They're both here. So that's big. And then, you know, Javon Foster, the tackle from Missouri, right? That's another guy that, he may not start right away. He could be a swing tackle. That's fine. But he's a guy that you have and you develop him. And at some point, Cam Robinson's contract will be done. At some point, Walker Little may or may not be around. They're both in their final years. So you need those kind of next wave of guys to either be the depth for the starters or step into a role here or there. A
couple of more for JP Shadrick. You get him at Jaguars.com. And, of course, you hear him on Jaguars Radio. JP, they chose not to go corner in rounds one or two. They did in rounds three and five. Jerrion Jones from Florida State, DeAndre Prince from Ole Miss. Your thoughts on how Jones and Prince will intertwine, if you will go into that corner room with the Tyson Campbells, the Ronald Darbys, and the Darnell Savages of the world?
Well, I mean, Jerrion Jones is, and they've said it after the draft, he is a nickel corner and a special teams contributor. So that sounds to me like Darby's going outside and obviously Tyson Campbell on the other side. So Jones, if he's not starting there, he'll compete at that nickel spot. That's fine. But Jones will be a contributor somehow on this team. Now, the question is DeAndre Prince. I mean, he went to Ole Miss. That's fine. And put together some solid numbers there. But is he as polished maybe as Jerrion Jones in certain areas of his game? Maybe not. He has that blazing speed straight away, and that's fine at the 40. But I think that's a little more of a development. He might be, hey, let's compete for a roster spot, practice squad type situation. I don't want to downplay it early going in, but just the reality of it, the way – the cornerbacks are set up in that room already. He's got a lot of veterans to overcome to be able to be one of the guys that's on this roster. But can he happen? Sure. I mean, if he has a really good offseason program and and comes into training camp and kills it, I think Prince has a really good shot to make this team. And but I think he's right there on the borderline. I think Jones is on it and fine, but Prince is just a little bit different.
JP, one of the things that was lost with the Zay Jones news was that Joey Sly was cut as well. Of course, he was a free agent the Jaguars brought in, well, like 7 weeks ago, and he's been sent out the door today because they drafted Cam Little out of Arkansas, a 20-year-old. I don't think Little turns 21 until August. But, man, all the confidence in the world. I know you were a part of that Zoom call that he had on Saturday. That was something else. And a very confident young man, which I like, by the way, coming to Jacksonville. And it appears, I mean, he's going to be in competition with Riley Patterson. But you would think a sixth-round pick, he's going to have every opportunity to win that kicking job.
Yeah, Cam Little's the kicker, Hacker. I mean, come on. Give me a break. You don't draft a kicker and make him – I mean, yeah, you compete and do all that. I mean, but unless he starts missing field goals all over the place in training camp in the preseason.
Or hitting Dave Campo in the head at training camp. That would be bad, too.
I was going to leave that out. I mean, Coach remembers that. He may not remember that. He might have amnesia. I don't know how that works when you hit the head with football on a field goal. We know what they went through the last couple of years at kicker, right? And the last thing they want to do is that again. So they feel like Cam Little's their guy, and I'm with you. I like the confidence, okay, borderline cockiness. That's fine as long as he can back it up. And he certainly did that at Arkansas. And, yeah, he's a youngin', that's for sure. He's 20. And Riley Patterson will be here. They need two legs in camp. They're going to have to, you know, that's how it works a lot of times. And then, but at the end of the day, it's Cam Little's job, even though they'll tell you they're all competing. You don't draft a kicker and then – get rid of him too fast.
JP, again, JP Shadrick, Jaguars.com, Jaguars Radio. They have money, man. I mean, I think they had the fifth or among the five top most free agent money right now for the remainder of the offseason. I think the Zay Jones and Joey Sly moves save an additional $4 to $5 million. My question is, and we did this song and dance last year with veteran guys post-draft, they never brought in a veteran edge rusher. They had every opportunity, but they never did, or they never signed anybody, rather. Is that a position that you think may need upgraded? And also, there's a lot of interesting corners from Stephon Gilmore, Xavien Howard. There's talk that Lattimore's not happy in New Orleans. Do you think Jacksonville potentially adds a veteran prior to training camp?
Yeah, that's an interesting thought, right? Because, you know, if they – they already went out and got a couple of secondary guys, the veteran guys in free agency. But if there's somebody out there they feel like can be right away a starter at the outside, that's a guy who's done it at a high level, that's going to cost you some money. That's the trick. You know, they've rolled some money back into the future to make some space. And, you know, we'll see what happens if they can get the deal done with the quarterback. That could open up even more money in the short term while rolling a lot of money to the cap in future years. That remains to be seen what they're going to do with that. But I'm with you on the corner. That kind of makes sense to me if you feel like, you know, you're that person away from being right. But we don't know. I mean, this is a new defense. It's a new coordinator. It's a new scheme. And there's a lot of new faces there. And you know, they've got to kind of get their sea legs underneath them, I think, and figure out what they are as a defense. What every defense needs is as many pass rushers you can get your hands on. So they feel like with Trayvon Walker and Josh Allen, that's fine. And they've got Abdullah, who's didn't get a lot of development on the field last year, right? They've got to kind of move him along. They added a couple of pieces in free agency. That's fine. But one more big one could be a good, solid addition to this team. So, for me, it's on defense. I think offense is in pretty – I hate to kind of knock on wood here, right? It's in pretty decent shape right now. They've got a lot of the parts that I feel like they wanted. The defense, though, I think is one where, obviously, with all the changes, there were some issues a year ago. And are they done making moves there? I don't know. I don't think they're going to leave much on the table – because they feel like they're right on the doorstep of being the division champ again.
JP, as we begin to wrap up, when they walked off that field in Nashville on January 7th, that was a bad day, right? I mean, losing 5 out of 6, the biggest late-season collapse in franchise history, that was not fun. And heads rolled, right? A coordinator got fired, 10 assistant coaches. I think they're going to have, when all's said and done, probably between 17 and 20 new players on the roster that were not here in 2023. Having said all that, over the last 3.5 months, clearly on paper, this is a better roster than what walked off the field in Nashville, correct?
I mean, yeah, you know, I would think so. I mean, the changes they've made at receiver, right, are in theory can be an upgrade at some point. Is Brian Thomas ready for the big time as a rookie wide receiver? That's tough for a lot of rookies to come in and truly dominate in their rookie season at that position. So I don't know how much you can truly ask of Thomas. We'll see what he has to offer when he shows up here next week and beyond. You know, offensive line, they got a veteran center who knows how to play the game physical style, and that's what they were lacking at times, short yardage, and those kind of goal line situations. Maybe Mitch Morse is an answer there. So, yeah, I mean, I would hope they feel like they got better. Eric Armstead, veteran defensive tackle, done it at a high level. Now he's coming off an injury. Is he ready to go? We'll find out when things get real, I think, in training camp about him, for sure. But they feel like they got a lot more of a veteran presence there in the interior. And you just needed to be stouter against the run overall on defense. And they did that with the big bodies, I think, in the draft to help the depth up front. So yeah, it's better. How much better? I guess we'll find out come January again.
Yeah, there's no doubt. You can only go on paper right now. Obviously, when things get real here in a couple of months, we'll have a much better understanding. JP Shadrick. JP, what's coming up on Jaguars.com? It was unbelievable content all draft weekend long. I know a lot of people, including myself, are waiting for more of the behind-the-scenes stuff, dare I say, in the hunt in the near future. What can we expect in the coming days, weeks, and months?
I know they're working on more hunt stuff right now as we speak. I don't know exactly when it's coming out, but it should be really soon. A lot of behind-the-scenes stuff at the draft. And thanks for watching our content all week. We've got rookie minicamp coming up next weekend. So the kids will start arriving in the middle of the week. Phase two is here, so coaches are out on the field. No helmets yet, no contact, but it's kind of the next step of the offseason program. I caught up with Cam Robinson today, and you'll see that interview coming up on Jaguars.com a little later today, if not tomorrow, and going into year number 8. And he's a brand new dad, 2 months old now. So his life has changed a good bit over the last year, and it was good to catch up with him and get his thoughts on where this team is going into 2024.
JP Shadrick, Jaguars.com and Jaguars Radio. JP, I know you're busy, man. Thank you for taking time out. I'll see you out there at OTAs.
All right, Hacker. We'll talk to you next time.
There you go, JP Shadrick. Always appreciate his time with us here on Hacker After Dark. About half the guys the Jaguars drafted played in the Shrine Bowl and the College Football All-Star Game to end the year. Eric Galco is the Director of Football Operations and Player Personnel for the Shrine Bowl. Let's talk DeAndre Prince, Jerry and Jones, Cam Little, and others next. Eric Galco of the Shrine Bowl joins me on Hacker After Dark. Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, your home for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and we are glad you are with us. Rookie minicamp for the Jags coming up this week, and the Jaguar draft class looked pretty good to us. Let's talk to some guys that had some interaction with some of the Jaguar drafted players in this process. One of those individuals is Eric Galco. He is the Director of Football Ops and Player Personnel for the Shrine Bowl. He had 3 of the Jaguars' 9 draft picks in his game and a couple of the coveted undrafted free agents. Eric, how we doing?
We're doing great, man. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Eric, we're good. Thank you for the time. And all right, the Shrine Bowl, obviously one of the signature all-star games of the draft process. And you had Jerry and Jones, DeAndre Prince, and Cam Little in your game. Before we talk about those three individually and your thoughts on the Jags as a draft as a whole, just talk about the Shrine Bowl a little bit and what you guys have done now for quite some time.
Yeah, this was the 99th year of the Shrine Bowl this past year, but I've kind of taken over the last 3 years or so, and really been focused on making this the best-in-class event. And the Shrine Bowl's seen almost 100% increase in draft picks the last couple of years, and I think we're a best-in-class event that has some of the best seniors in the country, all down in Frisco, Texas, at the Dallas Cowboys facility. So a pretty awesome event, and having guys like Jerry and DeAndre and the best kicker in the draft, Cam Little, was an awesome treat for us.
Let's focus on those three. Again, 3 of the Jaguar draft picks did play in the Shrine Bowl. Jerry and Jones was the 3rd round pick. here in Jacksonville. I know you were very high on him watching your social media, particularly the night he got drafted. What did you like about Jerrion Jones at the Shrine Bowl, and what do you think the Jaguars are getting with him?
Yeah, really in college, Jerrion had been a really capable, effective, athletic outside corner at Florida State and was still making huge strides there. But because of the talent they have at that Florida State defense, he was asked to play the nickel this year, and he dominated. He was, I think most NFL scouts would agree that just based on how he played that year, he was the best nickel in college football last year, and he was one of the best nickel corners in this draft class from a projection standpoint. I think for the Jaguars, you got a guy in Jerrion Jones who can step in tomorrow, be an effective high-end nickel, can play outside, can work on the boundary as need be with motions and adjustments and all that stuff as well. But he could be more than that too. I think getting a plug-and-play nickel without that potential and a guy who runs in the 4.3s is a fantastic value, I think, for the Jaguars, and a guy that a lot of NFL teams wanted, coveted. I was surprised he lasted as long as he did in the third round, because a lot of teams that told me pre-draft, if he's there in the third, we're probably going to take him, and he won't last long in the fourth round. So Jaguars got a great value when they got him.
Seems to be a guy that loves football, too. And I know that sounds funny, but that matters, doesn't it? A guy that actually loves the game of football.
He does, and he's got the right kind of chip on his shoulder. And some guys say that, and they're like, yeah, but they actually just want to, you know, check the box. They got drafted. Jerrion wants to be a fantastic NFL player, and he's a guy I got a chance to talk to and know a little bit in November and December of this past year, and just talking to me about how to interview well, what matters in an all-star game, what matters in the draft process. How do I translate this to the NFL level? I mean, this is a guy that really wants to be great and special. And like I said, going to the nickel, some guys in college, they change positions. It's a little bit of a, I don't want to do that. How am I going to adjust? He took that opportunity and became the best nickel in college football. He's going to get to the NFL, and he's going to be the best version of Jerrion Jones possible. And again, I think the Jaguars got a starting level player for the next decade.
Eric Galco, the director of football ops and player personnel for the Shrine Bowl, here with us on 1010XL. In Jacksonville. Eric, in round five, they went back to the corner position. DeAndre Prince from Ole Miss, you had him in your game as well out there. What did you like about DeAndre Prince?
Yeah, similar to Jerrion, that he's a really good athlete, another 4.3 type of 40-yard dash time guy, and a guy who can really play in space and play downfield. But DeAndre is definitely the outside corner version of Jerrion, a tough, physical, but really long and athletic, and can play away from the frame at a really high level in DeAndre Prince. He's a guy that can develop. I think he's a guy we invited 2 years ago. He's been really good at Ole Miss for the last two seasons. And I think he's still hitting his ceiling as a player in the future as well, too. But a guy outside corner, physical, can stay in phase as he works in cover three or man coverage on the outside. He can really be an effective outside player.
You know, it's interesting because, again, depending on what scouts think, these mock drafts, you know, looking at DeAndre Prince in round five, the talk I've had the last week or so is the Jaguars might have gotten a steal there. There was some thought he might go around earlier in round four.
No doubt. It's hard to find guys who are long, athletic, and can run in the 4.3s. And that alone was probably enough for Prince, but a guy who's been a two-and-a-half-year starter in the SEC, again, those guys are hard to find, and DeAndre's got a ton of talent to develop with. And hey, if you can find a guy that might be a starter for you in the fifth round, that's a heck of a value. A
couple of more for Eric Galco, the director of football ops and player personnel of the Shrine Bowl. And then Cam Little, the kicker from Arkansas, was also at your game. And look, I've talked to Cam Little for about 5 minutes, but I can tell you in that five-minute conversation, boy, what an interesting guy. This is a guy that oozes confidence. He's the youngest kicker ever drafted in the NFL, and the Jaguars must love him because they've cut Joey Sly after the draft, so it's going to be Cam Little's job, it would appear. I don't think he turns 21 until the month of August. What did you like about Cam when he was out at your ball game?
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that's been one of the most consistent kickers in college football the last 2-3 years. Actually, the kicker that's kicking in the UFL right now, who's making 60-yarders like crazy, he was Cam's backup at Arkansas, and he couldn't beat out Cam. That's how strong of a leg and how effective Cam Little has been in his college career, but has a lot of confidence that you love in a kicker. I got a chance to get to know a guy we had in the Shrine Bowl a year ago, Jake Moody, when I'm going third round. I think Jake and Cam have so many similarities in terms of that raw confidence, that ability to kind of make long field goals, but also never miss those short ones. I think he's missed only one or two under 40 yards in his entire 3 or 4 year college career. And I think he's a consistent guy under 40 yards and a guy that can certainly be an impact on kickoffs. It's matter a lot more now. And I've seen Cam make 65-7 yard field goals in practice. Obviously, practice of the game is a different story, but he's got the leg that he's shown in college, making many 50-yard plus field goals that he can do at the NFL level too.
There were three kickers that went almost back to back to back. There was a run on kickers in about a span of 10 picks. The Jaguars got Cam third out of those kickers. Were you surprised he was the last kicker to go?
Certainly was. And kickers are a little bit unique in the sense, something like quarterbacks, where it's a little bit of your flavor and what your special teams coach wanted. But certainly pre-draft, I had talked to a lot of teams who thought Cam was 1A or 1B or one of the best kickers. So I think the draft, we played the draft out 10 times. I think Cam's the first kicker taken 6, 7, 8 of those times. But I think in this case, it just happened to be that the Jaguars were able to get the best kicker in the draft at their third spot. And again, that's my opinion. I'm biased a little bit because I think Cam's a heck of a kicker, but I think a lot of NFL teams would agree that Cam's got a great value. The Jaguars got a great value in Cam when they did.
Eric Galco, Director of Football Ops and Player Personnel for the Shrine Bowl. Eric, you also had two of the more talked about undrafted free agents the Jaguars got. Cephas from Texas San Antonio has gotten a lot of talk as to why he didn't get drafted and how the Jaguars might really have something there. Talk about those two undrafted guys a little bit.
Yeah, Cephas is one of the most sure-handed receivers in the draft class. He made some fantastic, highly impressive catches at UTSA. I think he really grew as a complete route runner over the course of the season because he had to be the number one guy on question in college. And sometimes I think NFL teams can underappreciate that being the guy that's the focal point of your entire offense. He had over, I think, over 35 or 40% of all the team's receiving yards. You've got to get open in really unique ways. Teams are game planning for you, and Josh overcame that at a really high level at UTSA. Probably the biggest reason he wasn't drafted is he was a surprise NFL combine snub. I think not being a combine guy, some teams get a little weird about taking those guys in the mid part of the draft, and he ended up falling out. But I think Josh has a fantastic chance to make this roster and be a 4 or 5 receiver for them this year and maybe more in the future. The other receiver, David White from Western Carolina, David's probably a little more of a developmental guy, had a lot of areas to grow in terms of his release and route running and getting off press, but a 6'2"-plus body type. This is a guy that I think can make a roster as a special teamer. He was one of the best gunner punt return prospects in this draft class. Not a returner himself, but a guy that can play on both punt teams, now on both kickoff teams and kick return teams. I think he's going to be an impact special teams guy, and if he makes the roster, that'll be probably the key reason why to start.
You know, the Josh Cephas thing is interesting because obviously we didn't watch a lot of Texas San Antonio games here in the city of Jacksonville, but your sentiments are echoed by a lot of people in the draft community that I've talked to since the draft ended a week and a half ago. In that combine snub, people really don't know why he was a combine snub. He did well in your game out there at the Shrine Bowl, and the Jaguars made him a priority free agent, right? Gave him a little more money than they would normally give an undrafted free agent. By all indications, I mean, I think it would be a surprise if Cephas didn't come in here and perform well in training camp.
He'll have every chance to. And obviously the Jaguars' depth chart, hey, you know it better than I do, but there's a real opening for receivers 4 through 6 on this roster. I think Cephas, if he can show a little bit of special teams value, which I think NFL teams always want to see now, again, with that new kickoff rule, that's 8 more plays that you got to find guys that can compete and be competitive on. But I think if he can show a little bit of that, he's going to really impress. You're going to see some really jaw-dropping catches in practices. The moment's not going to be too big for him. He can get off press. He can get off downfield. And when he extends away from his frame, he has maybe one of the best hands in this entire draft class. So great value there. I think he'll have one of the most fun camps. I think he's going to be a guy that'll be really hard for the Jaguars to cut because of how well he's going to do these next few months.
Eric, as we wrap up, the draft class as a whole, the three guys you had that got drafted, Cam Little, we can talk about Deontre Prince, Jerrion Jones, you add them to Brian Thomas and Mason Smith and Jordan Jefferson, Javon Foster on down the line. How do you think the Jaguars fared overall?
Oh, it was a great draft class, and they addressed the offensive defensive line, but obviously it'll start with Brian Thomas. And I think the ability he has, talking with people at LSU and then scouts who have been at LSU for the last couple of years and watching him, you go to LSU practice sometimes, and it's hard to tell who's better, him or Malik Nabers. I mean, these guys are really close athletically in how they move, and obviously Nabers does a lot of things better than Brian Thomas right now, but in 2 years, we may look back and be like, why were these guys drafted 22 picks apart? I mean, Brian Thomas is that physically gifted. He's certainly an athletic freak show at the NFL Combine. If not for Xavier Worthy, Brian Thomas would have been the number one talked about player at the NFL Combine, and he's still getting better as a receiver as well, can do a lot of things in the short and mid area as well too. So I think if Brian Thomas hits the way I believe he can and fits in that offense, you've got a wide receiver one, some offensive defensive line depth, some great secondary help to kind of replenish that part of the team, and the best kicker in the draft, the Jaguars. This may be exactly what they need to take Trevor Lawrence and that team over the edge.
Eric Galco, Director of Football Ops and Player Personnel of the Shrine Bowl. Eric, you guys had 57 players in your game that ultimately got drafted. The three here in Jacksonville, 54 others. What is that like for you draft weekend when you see so many players that played in the Shrine Bowl go on to achieve their dream to get drafted into the National Football League?
No, it's super rewarding. It's great for the event and the Children's Hospital that our event's all about, Shriners Children's, and having the attention of those players kind of being a part of that journey. But for me, man, it's the chance to work with these 57 guys and then guys like David and Josh after the draft and be even a small part of their NFL journey. It's incredibly rewarding for myself and our team. To the scouting side's fun. The event operations is a lot of work, but these guys being able to look back and say, man, I came to the NFL through this doorway of the East-West Shrine Bowl, and means a lot to me, to our team, and the hospital as well, too. So 57 draft picks, a huge achievement. Most ever the event's ever had in 99 years, and we're hoping for another 25% increase next year and be a best-in-class all-star game for the future.
Yeah, Eric, final question. You mentioned next year it'll be the 100th game. Obviously, that'll be a big deal. And I imagine the work has already begun, right? You're already looking for the talent you're going to bring next year.
Yeah, we're well on our way, and we're having our cross-check meetings as we speak, too. So our staff works nonstop for next year's draft class, and we're hoping our 100th game is another record-breaker year for us.
Eric, really appreciate the time. Thank you, as always. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, buddy.
And thank you to Eric Galco, the Director of Football Operations and Player Personnel for the Shrine Bowl, for joining us tonight here on Hacker After Dark. As, yeah, the Shrine Bowl had a handful of Jacksonville Jaguar rookies, including Jerrion Jones, including DeAndre Prince, including Cam Little, Joshua Cephas, just to name a few. So we appreciate Eric taking time out for us here in the city of Jacksonville to talk about those young men. In fact, we're scheduled to talk with DeAndre Prince on Friday down at Rookie Minicamp, and we'll bring you that conversation here Friday on Hacker After Dark. Well, that'll just about do it. What has been a very busy Wednesday night edition. We certainly appreciate you guys for hanging out with us here on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM in for Blue again tomorrow and Friday to close out the week. Looking forward to that. We got a ton of people to thank for our Wednesday night program this evening. Again, Eric Galco of the Shrine Bowl. Appreciate his time. Thank you to JP Shadrick, Jaguars.com and Jaguars Radio, for joining us. Former Jaguar wide receiver Cecil Shorts stopped by back in hour number one, and we brought you a Hacker After Dark replay of Chad Mahaffey, the head coach of Walker High School in Walker, Louisiana, the head football coach for Brian Thomas during Brian's junior and senior years out at Walker High School, as rookie minicamp for the Jaguars officially kicks off tomorrow. We will be back tomorrow night on a Thursday, and we will do it all over again beginning at 6 o'clock. J.J. LaSelva was your producer tonight. J.J., great job as always, man. I'm the Hacker, Ryan Green. And again, Jacksonville, thank you for spending part of your Wednesday evening with us right here on Hacker After Dark on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. So for all of us here on HAD, have an absolutely terrific remainder of your Wednesday evening, and we will talk to you again tomorrow night on a Thursday beginning at 6 o'clock. Until then, good night, Jacksonville.